Siv.
And this is
Inflight Entertainment. And it is, unfortunately, the last episode of our Black History Month, Black Movies. But
so it only felt appropriate to end the month with a movie that's called Black Hollywood. They've got to have us.
Yes. Which is a three-part documentary on Netflix, and which was released in 2018. And it pretty much have a lot of guest appearances by Diane Carroll, John Boyega, I think Harry Belafonte, and many, many other.
Jesse Williams, Debbie Allen, Reggie Rock Blythewood, Carmen Iago.
Morris
Fishburne, Delroy Lindo, Robert Townsend.
This three-part documentary pretty much highlights a loose timeline in Hollywood, far as, you know, Black actors and milestones in the realm of Black actors and achievement within Hollywood. Started first with, Hattie McDaniels from Gone with the Wind, if I'm not mistaken. So it starts out with that and her, you know, Academy Award milestone. And
well, it starts off a little bit before that, in that they do a quick, like, video edit of how Black people were primarily portrayed in movies, and that it was a lot of blackface, a lot of physical characteristics that were overemphasized, like large lips, large nose, that even like sad to say, thinking back to watching Looney Tunes cartoons growing up, that those type of characteristics for Black people were still being portrayed in cartoons when I was a kid. But then they move into Hattie from Gone with the Wind and her Oscar award.
Yeah, which they, well, she had to come in through the back.
She wasn't even allowed in the hotel because it was a whites only hotel.
Yes. So, yeah, so there were slight progression with the recognition of Black actors, but the system was still in place to where there's whites over here, Blacks over there, you know, in society.
Yeah, so for those not familiar with the series, it does follow the inside story, the history of Black actors, starting with how they were portrayed in the 20s and 30s, and then with Sidney Poitier and Harry Belafonte really starting to show that they're not characters, they are humans and can have human stories.
Right. Yeah. And was it the movie where Belafonte and the white woman was in? They couldn't, you know, have any indication that they liked each other or.
Yeah. So that was in the first episode of the three-part series. And it was so fascinating. So it was against the rules for them to kiss. So there was a scene where he cuts a coconut and hands it to her. And he says something like, "It's almost as good as champagne." And she drinks out of the coconut. She drinks the coconut water out of the coconut. And then he takes it back from her and he rotates it just enough so that where he's drinking out of it is exactly where her lips were on the coconut. And it's like a subtle nod to, we can't kiss on the screen, but I am still kissing her figuratively.
Right. Yeah, very clever. You know, yeah, it goes over the heads of all the races back in the day, back then, actually. But, Yeah, they made it work in the subtle subliminal way. They shared a kiss.
Right. And you know, Sidney Poitier did win an Oscar for his first role. I forget what movie that was in. But he helped open the door and define that we aren't just, you know, the wait staff, the maids, the background characters that you have in movies, that we can be that much more.
Right. Yeah. And he was, you know, he was the Black actor of, you know, integrity. He was this Black man of intelligence, of like excellence. Yeah, he was every other man, you know, except he had Black skin, but he was carrying himself as a prestigious, you know, man. Yeah, like his white counterparts. And that's what really broke the mold, you know, with the portrayal of, you know, Black men in Hollywood, like Sidney Poitier is like, hey, you gotta put some respect on my roles and my portrayals, you know, within the roles I take. So that was pretty big.
Yeah. So, and very much in the old school Hollywood type of actor that you might think of. And then the series moves into the 70s and 80s and start getting into more of the blaxploitation films, and that they really saved Hollywood. They were bringing in all the dollars, and then the whites took it over and sort of ruined the entire genre. Same thing happened with the like hip hop and gangster movies, and that it actually came from the Black creators, and then the white creators came in and overdid it. And so the series goes through a series of how you have these Black creators that are fighting and fighting for their voice. And when they finally get it and it's successful, and there's been studies done that show that movies with diverse cast and not just Black actors as set piece, that they are more successful. And so Hollywood sees this and they try to take it over and they end up fucking it up.
Yeah, it's like the powers that be that, you know, take something successful and exploit it, repackage it. And I mean, that was the music industry back in the day, right? Which harks back to Chadwick Boseman character in Ma Rainey, right? He had, you know, he was trying to break into music, but they just took his song, gave it to a white person, and and made that white artist successful. So, yeah.
So, and then ultimately, so the first two episodes in the series go through a lot of the history and those two things and interviews and with all of the creators and actors involved in all of that. The third episode gets more into the current renaissance that we're in and really highlights that that Black creators aren't just being viewed as set pieces or an accent to what might be going on in Hollywood, that they are something like a group of people that can tell human stories, that they aren't just Black stories, they are human stories. And that's been seen with movies like Black Panther and I would say Ma Rainey. Almost all the films we've done this month have been human stories, not necessarily Black stories. Right. And I have to say that I'm absolutely guilty of thinking, oh, well, that movie's not for me because it has all Black actors. And you are helping me break through that thinking, so thank you.
Yeah, anytime. Yeah, I mean, I think my thing is, if you can connect with a character to have a universal human dilemma, it's not a color thing, it's a human thing. It's like, you know, like, yeah, I can connect this person's dilemma, I can connect with this person's anxiety or strife and things like that. Then you kind of just like, okay, it's not a Black movie, because like, it's a human story. Yeah. So,
I've mentioned this on our podcast plenty of times. I don't like movies, or I tend to not choose to watch movies that tell emotional stories. I like the sci-fi action movies because I do watch things to escape, and you take me out of my comfort zone there. So thank you on that. And you do take me out of my comfort zone and making me not just watch human stories, but stories that include Black characters.
Yeah, see, that's how we all come together.
as I have Fast and Furious on mute in the background. So.
Yes, but hey, speaking of Fast and Furious, what's her name? Oh my God, she's
She's beautiful. I can't think of her name either. She plays the female hacker in Fast and Furious 7.
And she's the Daenerys. She's in Game of Thrones. She's like Daenerys advisor.
So I have a question for you. The third episode also got into the entire British invasion. Okay. And I know that's a touchy subject for you. So I thought it was interesting in that some of the American actors that they were interviewing saying, I get it. They're trained as thespians. Whereas a lot of time American people don't necessarily train. They just are, hey, you're good looking. You should go become an actor. So how did you feel about that whole dialogue that they were having about the British invasion?
It's interesting. And like I said, I definitely straddled a line on this. That makes sense because they're classically trained, things like that. But on the flip side, in America, you don't have an emphasis or you don't have money or resources within the Black community to really raise up the element of theater, to raise up the element of studying this craft of acting. It's all about freaking survive by any means necessary. So yes, they afforded this luxury of just taking time out to really hone their craft of acting. Black neighborhoods, they don't really have the resources or energy and or time to really focus on that. There are exceptions, right? There are exceptions. So that's kind of like where the yin and yang of the conversation goes. But what I would say is, I think, wasn't it? Is it Casey Lyman's Lemons? I'm butchering her name. She was one of the directors. She had the white locks.
And she
made a very interesting point, and it hit the nail right on the head. I think she said, I'm paraphrasing this, it's like, it's a complex subject because I think sometimes that maybe the studios want to play it safe and not cast that person that have that trauma in their DNA that can really project that. And when she said, because think about it. If they redid Malcolm X, the movie now, and they cast Idris Elba instead of Mahershala Ali. Now Mahershala Ali is a Muslim from Oakland. So you're telling me that Mahershala cannot bring the nuance of a Black Muslim American, to the Malcolm X character that, Idris Elba, he could bring more to that? I don't know. Maybe, but I doubt it, So like I say, it's a tricky thing. So that's, but I definitely like to see, you know, African-American actors, especially pivotal roles, you know, to bring that, especially when it involves America, like, you know, the Black American experience. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Because I feel, you know, I can connect better instead of the method way of bringing the character to life. There's that American actor that can ask the uncle, that can ask the grandfather, that can ask the father that been through things in Black America that they can pull from, you know, that can get these stories, that can say, oh, you know, I had a friend that was lynched or so-and-so, you know, so they can draw from that trauma. So, but, you know, that's just me. And I would like to put on record that Daniel Kaluuya did an awesome job as Fred Hampton and Judas and Black Messiah. But I like to put a caveat to that. It's like the movie focused on Fred Hampton at a specific point in his life. It wasn't the birth and death of Fred Hampton. So therefore, I think, you know, he did an awesome job of encapsulating Fred Hampton's life in that particular moment in time of Fred Hampton's life. And so on and so forth. Yeah. I don't know if that answered anything, but where?
Yeah. So I mean, going back to your point towards the end that they can ask their grandparents about an experience, you know, in last week's Mudbound that we reviewed, Mary J. Blige was able to really capture the essence of her character because she could talk to her grandmother who actually lived that life. Yeah. And pull from real life. So I hear what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah, but that's not to say that.
Yeah, I'm happy to look at really nice, good actors on screen.
Yeah, but like end of the day, good acting is good acting. Like I'm not. Hey, I love them all. I love Boyega. I love Elba. I love Kaluuya. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, you know,
the cast of The Wire.
Yeah, the cast of The Wire. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I like to see Black people act. You know, whether, you know, here or abroad. So, but yeah, but that's the kind of the only thing, you know, with me sometimes, you know. And then also, and I like to bring this one up, when they were talking about white directors, Black stories. Now, okay. This is like an ebb and flow with me because I'm glad they interviewed the director of Ray, because I thought I thought he did a really great job. You know, bringing, you know, Ray's story to the big screen. And then they had Whoopi Goldberg talk about The Color Purple, right? That Steven Spielberg directed, which is, I would say 99.9% of Black people love The Color Purple, because like, you know, Steven Spielberg did such a great job with that version of The Color Purple. I'm sure it would be a lot more dark. If they redid Alice Walker's Color Purple, it would be a lot darker. It would be like,
it'd be gritty.
It'd be rated R. Yeah. It would be, yeah, but Spielberg brought it to a palpable level, to where you understood the story and you knew what was happening at the time, but it didn't beat you in the head with it. And it focused on the longing of two sisters uniting. And I mean, he did such a beautiful job and I loved it. And what was interesting is what Whoopi Goldberg pretty much was saying, like, hey, like we could have won more awards. We could have, but the NAACP pretty much torpedoed The Color Purple because it was directed by a white director, which was bullshit, you know. So like I said, the pendulum swings, you know, both ways on that, you know. Like, yeah, I love to see Black directors, but hey, I couldn't see another person directing The Color Purple like Spielberg brought to the screen, in my opinion.
Yeah, something that also sort of was surprising to me, and then thinking back to the things that I saw on TV growing up in the South, was that a lot of times in the in the movies from the 30s, 40s, 50s, that they would only have the black actors in like the, like singing something in a film, not necessarily acting in the film, so that they could edit the films to be more palatable to Southern white KKK folks. Right. And then it made me realize, like, I had never heard of Roots until I moved to New York, which is crazy. But that's because it was probably never shown in the South.
True. That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Like, why would you show, I forget how many part miniseries that was, you know, about the atrocities of slavery, and you could trace that back to pretty much those people downstairs.
Yeah, it was not a friendly viewing for people.
Wow. Well, I mean, better late than never, as far as your viewing of Roots. I'm glad you, you know, checked it out sooner than later, or later than never. No, better late than never. Right. That's what. So yeah, you know, Alex Haley's, broadcast masterpiece, and very bold for the time, because at that time, with broadcast, I mean, like, they didn't want to show anything like that. Like,
right. Well, and starring LeVar Burton, Star Trek fame.
Mr. Reading Rainbow himself.
Yep.
See, I could go back to Reading Rainbow on LeVar, shoot. it was an interesting, it was a very good three-part documentary that broke down certain aspects. And I think the person who did this particular documentary is British, so it was cool that he kind of brought up the elephant in the room, like Jenna was saying, which is the, the British, the black Brits, doing more roles, American roles, so that was interesting.
Yes. Yeah. So it is on Netflix. From a rating perspective, sit on the sofa, definitely go through it's like 2.5-3 hours. When you watch all three back to back, put on your shoes. You're not quite sure if you should do this or something else, or go outside without a mask or vaccine and get COVID.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a good, insightful watch. Yeah. It's a sit down. Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of things I didn't really, especially, with the whole Color Purple thing, that really, like, what? And that kind of gave me the side eye to the NAACP. I always have a side. I always give the NAACP the side eye sometimes, but especially with that whole Color Purple thing, I'm like, oh, come on now, stop. But very insightful. Definitely sparks conversation about, black directors, black imagery in film, so you can be more like conscious of, the images you see as far as, black people. And yeah, I dug it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it was sit on the sofa for me. What I found fascinating or very happy about was that before you and I started doing the podcast, like if I had watched this series, a lot of the films that they were referencing, I probably would have never watched, except for the safe ones, things like Eddie Murphy or Denzel Washington. And a lot of the movies they referenced, I was like, wait a minute, I've watched all of these.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, so you see when they were showing Juice, I'm like, yeah, General got to thank me for that one. They were like black people love some Juice. So that's good. That's why I love it.
Didn't they reference Cleopatra in it?
A Cleopatra? Oh, well, yeah, they did. Well, they referenced some Pam Grier. I think they did Cleopatra Jones, I think.
Yeah, because I was like, yeah.
Yeah,
we did that one.
Hell yeah. That's right. Yeah. So, well, yeah, and that's the cool thing. And I think that's the beauty, you know, movies and, you know, they're like books, you know, it's like, oh, what book you suggest? Let me read this book. It's like movies. Like, okay, what movies that, you know, you think I should watch? What movies you think, you know, I should look at or should just have a mental like bank, you know, for reference points. You know, so that's, I think that's the beauty of a movie. And I'm glad, you know, that I know for you know, I just usually just lob, you know, these movies at you and be like, okay, well, let's see if you like it or not. But regardless, like these are something you, but regardless, these are movies that you gotta have in your back pocket. If you talk about black movies, you gotta be like, yes, I know that movie. I know that reference. Like Captain America.
Yes. And I have to say, I knew 90% of the references in the film, in the docu-series. I think some of the older films, and unfortunately, a lot of the films by female directors, I was like, I haven't seen any of these. But they're all throwbacks, and we have the next year to dive into them. So, adding to our throwbacks, mm-hmm. with a lot of black directors, black characters. So stay tuned.
Yes, yes. So y'all thought it was over with Black History Month? Nah. We're going to stay blackity black on y'all. All right. So there you have it. They gotta have us on Netflix, three-parter. Definitely watch it. Watch with the family. You know, it's educational. It's insightful. And, you know, you got to learn a lot about, you know, Hollywood. And, you know, black actors that I was trying to blaze, that still are, you know, trailblazing Hollywood for the next generation of actors and filmmakers. Yeah. All right. So we will catch y'all in March with some new stuff. Till then, wish everyone safe physical distancing and
wear a mask.
Yes. Peace.